Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and the fastest growing segment of our society, the only valid and valuable segment of our society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. It's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law, because it's liberating, enriching, and empowering covenant. Provides the only answer for you and your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. My plan this morning was to go directly into the events in Baghdad, and then related events in Iran, and then pick up the story where we left off in terms of Time magazine's coverage of the fall of Fallujah. But I just can't get over how unbelievably immoral the government of the United States has become. Der Spiegel, about a month ago, released an article that said that they had evidence to prove that the reason that, the primary reason, that FedEx and UPS shipments were delayed during this, let's use the pagan term, the Christmas season, was because the government was attempting to intercept computer shipments and manipulate them. Not manipulate where they go, but manipulate the computers themselves. And so this morning in the opening news, there was comment to that regard where the government saying, yeah, so you caught us. So what? Their first excuse was that we would be unwise not to try to protect ourselves and spy on those who wish to do us harm. That screams of paranoia. The United States is on the wrong side of almost every argument in the world today. And it's on the wrong side of doing the right thing for its people. And so it knows it's vulnerable. And the last thing it wants is people exposing and condemning its grotesque malfeasance. And so what is the government doing? Spying on everybody. It assumes that everybody is out to get them. Now, the fact is that most people are just comatose. They don't really give a hoot. But the few that do care, that are informed, rightfully are opposed to this government. And so they're doing everything they can to collect dirt on everybody. It reminds me of a story, and it's a story that I copied and pasted that I was going to cover, and we will cover in detail in some future program. I think it dates back to the 1960s. Interesting story was sent to me by one of our most devoted listeners to this program, who found it as fascinating as I did. Two or three participants, active participants in the civil rights movement, recognized that the J. Edgar Hoover FBI was vehemently opposed to the civil rights movement, and that anything that J. Edgar Hoover was opposed to, he ran psychological operations against. He brought the tyranny of the government, its judicial arms and law enforcement arms, against them. He discredited them in any way that he possibly could in the media. And so these three individuals, I think it was three, decided they would risk their own fortunes and freedom, and they were not wealthy individuals by any manner, but certainly risk their freedom, to do what no one was willing to do, to go find out the truth about J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI. And they raided, burglarized the FBI's offices, and they published what they found, which was hideous. It was every bit as hideous as to what Edward Snowden revealed about the NSA. Maybe even more so. The interesting thing that went through these three individuals' minds who had the courage to do the right thing, to rob the FBI's files and to publish its internal documents. It didn't make Americans more vulnerable. It made them freer, particularly those who responded to what they learned. Is that they recognized that no one would stand up to the FBI. No one would stand up to the realization that it was an agency way out of control. It was a counterproductive agency. It was originally formed to combat organized crime and the mafia. It had way outlived its purpose, and it was looking for a new purpose. And in doing so, it became the ultimate Snoop Dogg and psychological operations unit for a particular agenda. And the three courageous individuals that robbed it recognize that the reason that politicians won't speak out against it is the same reason politicians won't speak out against the NSA. There's files on everybody. Everybody has skeletons in their closet. And the more someone has done with their lives, the more skeletons there are in the closet. Now, many of those skeletons are legitimate, but they can be twisted to look awful. And so they're afraid to stand up. The second aspect of that story that struck me was that, well, it's okay that the United States does it because, well, we think there are other nations that are doing it too, or at least would like to do it. And you wonder when the old childhood axiom would finally resonate with people. So two wrongs don't make a right. The realization that somebody else is acting badly is no justification to act badly. And in this case, we don't even have any information to come to the conclusion that other nations are acting badly in this regard. Only that we are. And of course, it was just presented by Salem Radio News, the Christian news agency, as, oh, that's just fine, because from their perspective, their country and their government and their religion are all one. It's just fine. The second story is the one that we're going to cover. And the Salem Radio News said that those in control of Fallujah were Al-Qaeda, at least linked to Al-Qaeda. That is absolutely false. Those in control of Fallujah are members of the Sunni Awakening Councils. They are Sunni jihadists that America armed. That's who they are. They're using American weapons. We gave them to them. They operate under the name of the Islamic State of Iraq. And when they operate in Syria, they call themselves the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. They're simply Sunni Muslims. And as we know that the depiction Sunni Muslim, which is descriptive of who they are, means that they are devoted to and aligned with the Sunnah of Muhammad. The Sunnah of Muhammad is Muhammad's words and deeds. They are told in only one place, the Islamic Hadith. And in the Islamic Hadith, it reveals that if you're going to be a Sunni, and you're going to follow the Sunnah, the example of Muhammad, then you're going to be a terrorist. Then you're going to be a rapist. That you're going to be a slave trader. That you're going to be a jihadist. That you're going to be a mass murderer. That you're going to be a pedophile. That you're going to be savage. Because Muhammad was all of those things. And that's about all Muhammad was. The truth is empowering. The lie, all it does is destroy the listener's ability to make intelligent decisions. Garbage in, garbage out. If you're constantly besieged with rubbish, then all you're going to be doing is bouncing garbage between your eardrums. And that is our problem. Now, with that, I'd like to turn to two articles, both that speak of the issues that we were discussing yesterday, one in a microcosm, the other in a broader scope. The International Herald, Dateline Baghdad, reads, at least 7 car bombs detonated across Baghdad on Wednesday in lethal, apparently coordinated attacks by militants that killed at least 30 people, according to police and health records. That was not in Fallujah, that was in Baghdad, at least 30 dead. Separately, at least 18 people were killed when 3 car bombs detonated in a funeral tent in the city of Bukaba, north of Baghdad. And later, on Wednesday, today, you know, they're way ahead of us in time, 3 people were killed when an improvised explosive device detonated inside of a Baghdad market. By 2 p.m. Baghdad time, the death toll in Baghdad alone appeared to be the highest for the city so far this year, and brought total deaths over the last 3 days to more than 80 after a rash of bombings targeting mostly Shiite neighborhoods. So the news is that the Sunnis have regained control of Fallujah and most of Anbar province, taking control from the Shiite government, wielding, of course, American weapons on both sides. But these attacks didn't take place in Fallujah. These were in Baghdad, telling us that the scope of the civil war that is erupting now in Iraq could well lead to savagery akin to what we're witnessing in neighboring Syria, that it's going to be one elongated war zone. The attacks, the International Herald says, have coincided with bloody fighting in Iraq's western Anbar province. Yes, they're taking place at the same time, where the government is locked in a standoff with Sunni militants who have seized territory, as well as taking control of all of Anbar province. We'll return to what is happening in Iraq, how it pertains to Iran, after the commercial break. CNN today published an editorial, and we will consider the author at the end of the editorial. She is a Republican hack, so be aware that she is part of the problem on the one side, and yet is able to point out the problem on the other. The CNN editorial reads, Iranian President Rouhani took to Twitter on Tuesday with the sobering message that the world powers have surrendered to Iranian nation's will. Surrendered to the Iranian nation's will. Now, normally I don't believe anything that a Muslim leader would say. But in this particular case, he's right. The accord that was fashioned, and it was a 4-page document, principally between the United States and Iran, did everything Iran wanted. They could continue to have all of their nuclear facilities intact, including those facilities that were specifically designed to perfect their nuclear bomb making. There would be no diminishment of the centrifuges, which are used to enrich uranium way above what is used for a nuclear power plant, which is 3-4% fissile purity, to 20%. And then it's at 20%, you're 90% of the way to reaching 90%, which is the fissile purity required for a fission bomb. Now, I might say, how is 20%, 90% of the way to 90%? Well, it's just the nature of the isotope and how much more energy and time and effort is necessary to get it from very low percentages, you know, below 4. And then from 4 to 20, it takes most of the time, most of the energy, most of the effort, 90% of it. Iran gets to keep everything, all of its nuclear ambitions. And the West gives up every sanction. So for Iran, it was the ultimate capitulation by the West. And the only thing that Iran allegedly gave up was that they agreed to convert some of their 20% physical purity uranium into a different form, which would take about 2 more weeks to transform back into 90% physical purity to make a bomb. But even in that, they had done that to get relief from other sanctions way back 9 months before this agreement was reached. And the agreement is only for 6 months, and it's only binding if everybody agrees to everything and all sanctions by every party are removed. Iran won. They will get their bomb. But more than that, Iran is empowered, because Iran now becomes, as a result of the American invasion of Iraq, the dominant economic power in the Islamic world. All as a result of a combination of two things. One is the stupidity of George Bush deciding we should invade Iraq, which in effect gave it to Iran. And second, Obama's stupidity in touting an agreement that he claims prevents Iran from having a bomb that does exactly the opposite, that further empowers Iran militarily and economically. Well, that's what this article editorial is suggesting. Iran's leader, it reads, is referring to the brand new nuclear agreement that was announced in Geneva this week. There's a add-on agreement. But this is the same agreement that President Obama and Secretary Kerry say will freeze and then roll back Iran's nuclear program. The one administration hacks are so excited about that they're heralding it as a breakthrough equal to Nixon opening up China. So it's time for a reality check. The deal with the Persian nation makes it clear that we are leaving the region and that we are leaving Iran in charge, which she did not write because she can't write it, is that we put Iran in charge. She will go on to tout the surge in Iraq as being a good thing and the invasion of Iraq as a good thing, when in fact it was the invasion of Iraq that put Iran in charge, because we gave Iraq to Iran, which means that we also gave Syria to Iran, which means we also gave Lebanon to Iran, which means we fundamentally changed the balance of power between Shia Muslims and Sunni Muslims. Yes, indeed, we put the Iranians in charge. We'll be back in a moment. I want to speak just a little bit to the relative scale of things here. This is a editorial that said that, in fact, the author writes, Iran is now poised to be the alpha dog of the Middle East, the dominant economic, military, and political power in the region that controls the world's exported oil. And thanks to the agreement struck by President Obama's hand-picked secretary, John Kerry, it is doing so with America's blessing. There's parts of that are true and parts that are not true. The Middle East is no longer the world's largest source of exported oil. In fact, in the United States, we get most of our oil now from Canada and from Mexico. Europe gets most of its oil from Russia. So that's not an accurate statement, but be that as it may, let's look at the relative populations here to get a sense for what we have that's at stake. Iran has a population of 76 million. Iraq, which is now Iran West, has a population of 32 million. Syria, which was gifted to Iran because of the American invasion, has a population of 22 million. Collectively, that's 130 million. Saudi Arabia, which is the dominant force for Sunnis in terms of a military force and having military might, it has a population of 28 million. Qatar and Kuwait, which would be considered allies, have a population of 3 and 2 million, respectively. So it's 33 million versus 130 million. So while Shia Islam represents only 15% of Muslims, and that 85% of Muslims are Sunnis, in this region where Islam is dominant, now Iran controls a population of 130 million, plus really Lebanon as well, whatever the population of Lebanon is these days. So you're looking at 130 million versus the Sunnis in opposition represent about 33 million. This would be far worse than the South thinking they can win a war against the North in the American Civil War. Just by sheer numbers, it puts Iran in a position where it will be extraordinarily difficult for Sunnis to achieve their goal, which is to eliminate Iranian influence, at least to carve it way back so that they can form a unified Islamic platform from which to attack the rest of the world. Now, the realization that we will drop sanctions, this article reads, against the Iranians, has led the Iranian economy to surge. Their stock market value has risen by 133% in the last few weeks, and companies previously prevented from doing business with Iran are now lining up to resume trade once all of the sanctions are lifted. Now, the fact of the matter is that the majority of the sanctions have already been lifted. Like Japan, for example, gets all of its oil, essentially all of its oil, from Iran, and has all along. Russia just announced a deal that will trade Iranian oil for goods and services from Russia, that even if not a single sanction were lifted, and that's just not the case, I mean, all of the sanctions are essentially being lifted, but the Russian deal takes the Iranian oil revenue back up to pre-sanction levels. The sanctions reduced the Iranian sale of oil by 50%, and the Russian deal, which trades Russian military hardware and Russian goods and services for oil, is equivalent to 50% of Iran's current sales, which means it brings them back up to pre-sanction levels already. And this will be on top of that. And now, of course, Iran controls Iraq, which means they get all of the benefit of the Iraqi oil revenue as well. All with America's blessing. Rouhani, who is now the new prime minister over Iraq, is a clever man. It's not very often that we run into clever individuals who are devout Muslims. He has presented himself to the West as a moderate, as someone that the West can reason with. But his history belies that. It tells an entirely different story. When the Ayatollah al-Khomeini was in France as and really paid to stay there by the United States, and the United States was supporting a puppet government with the Shah, and of course the United States CIA had deposed the freely elected government of Iran so that the Shah could be their puppet. Rouhani, as a young Muslim scholar, was devoted to Khomeini. I mean, he was devoted to the most fundamental aspect of the Islamic revolution in Iran. He spent considerable time with Khomeini in France. He prepared, he was one of the leaders, if not the most important leader, in preparing Iran for the return of Khomeini after the fall of the Shah. He has been on virtually every hardline committee and position managing Iran's military all along. He's the guy that for years provided interference with the nuclear regulatory agencies of the United Nations so that Iran could keep this pretense amongst the ignorant that it was developing nuclear energy when the obvious conclusion was that they were developing a bomb. And while the mullahs were all talking about we're developing a bomb and we're going to destroy Israel, it was Rouhani that said, oh, no, not really. We just really want some nuclear power because we need atoms to boil water because, well, you know, we actually sit on a sea of natural gas we don't even use, but, oh, that's so yesterday. So Rouhani has played the West for fools and has been a hardliner right from the beginning. Well, now Rouhani and Obama seem to have very different interpretations of the Geneva Agreement, writes this editorialist. But here's what really matters. According to the terms of the deal, has Iran agreed to give up its nuclear weapons program? According to Obama, yes. According to Rouhani, absolutely not. And that's what Rouhani said the day after the agreement was signed. We didn't give up anything. We gained everything. Politics is the one thing that counts in the West Wing, winning the next election, getting a bump in the polls, spinning the PR machines of the administration looks good right now, no matter what the price that will be paid in the future. Now, this editorialist wrote this to condemn the Obama White House, and it's true of the Obama White House, but it was no different with the Bush White House. The recently disclassified documents surrounding, and this is the proof statement that she has. She has two. One is the surge, which I won't go into. The other, I'll just state because it's something that Americans need to know. The recent declassified documents surrounding the 2012 Benghazi attack revealed that the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff were told explicitly that it was a planned attack by Ansar Sharia, long before they headed to the White House to meet with and brief President Obama. Yet the President's representatives within hours spoke out publicly and lied to the American people. They edited the brief that they were given 12 times and ultimately blamed the Benghazi attack on a spontaneous reaction to obscure YouTube video rather than admit, and this woman writes, that Al-Qaeda-affiliated terrorists were responsible. Now, we have spent programs devoted to identifying who Ansar Sharia is. And Ansar Sharia is as devoted to Al-Qaeda, as beholding to Anwar al-Zawahiri as any Islamic terrorist organization on earth. There is no other Islamic terrorist organization that has a closer tie to Ayman al-Zawahiri. The intoxicated leaf of Allah, who's the founder of Ansar Sharia, is a devotee. But that does not make him affiliated with Al-Qaeda. His group has no affiliation with Al-Qaeda. He personally has a man crush on Ayman al-Zawahiri. Furthermore, the problem that Republicans and the military and the State Department are having with all of this, and the reason they want the alternative view to gain traction, is that the weapons provider to Ansar Sharia is the United States. That Ansar Sharia, which means supporters of Sharia law, met regularly with the U.S. CIA. They were used as one of the implements to bring down Muammar Gaddafi. And even after Muammar Gaddafi was brought down, State Department CIA agents played basketball with sports, watched sports, chit-chatted with, had what they considered to be a relationship with Ansar Sharia, thinking that they could use them to accomplish their goals and Libya. Well, it backfired on them, of course. And it was Ansar Sharia that perpetrated the attack. They had planned the attack using American weapons. And America had egg all over its face because the CIA was in bed with them. That's the truth. Their links to Al-Qaeda are irrelevant, which is why U.S. senators and congressmen get egg all over their face when they try to say the president lied, it was an Al-Qaeda attack. It wasn't. It was Ansar Sharia. It was a direct result of the malfeasance of American foreign policy and the corrupt nature of the U.S. CIA. So this article then, after stubbing her toe on Al-Qaeda-affiliated terrorists were responsible, because they were not, says why? Because it was just 3 weeks before the presidential elections and a campaign where Mr. Obama had touted his decision to issue the order to kill Osama bin Laden and put Al-Qaeda on the ropes. So how, if Al-Qaeda was now on the ropes, if he was the great killer of Osama bin Laden, could it be an Al-Qaeda attack? So it had to be the film, she says. But killing Osama bin Laden was meaningless as it relates to Islamic terrorism. So this particular editorial from Kathleen Troya, who goes by KT McFarland, she's a Fox News national security analyst, which means she's a hack for the Republican Party. She concludes, she says, here's my prediction. The agreement with Iran will be hailed as a breakthrough, and then... But then, so was Neville Chamberlain's deal with Adolf Hitler in Munich, at least for a little while. And to a large degree, that is true. And this is all related. The gifting of Iraq to Iran is going to turn out to be, along with the Syrian war, which is related, to be the catalyst for World War III. We're watching it in terms of the proxy war in Syria. We're witnessing it in terms of the development of the Iranian nuclear program and their dominance in the region. Now let's return to the Time magazine story that we were covering. I'd like to go back to the beginning because we were not very far in it. But the Time wrote that the Iraqi government that the U.S. put into power, which was an astute statement, it's a puppet government, very much like what happened in Vietnam, very much like what we did in Afghanistan, which is why they don't work. During 8 years of war, lost the city of Fallujah over the weekend. The city of Fallujah was actually lost long before that, but it full admission now that Fallujah is in the hands of the Sunnis, and we gave the country to the Shiites. While you weren't paying attention, Al-Qaeda has resumed to western Iraq with a vengeance in the guise of the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, actually. They do operate as the Islamic State of Iraq in Iraq, and they operate as the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria when they are in Syria, but they have zip to do with Al-Qaeda. Nothing. Sunni insurgents seem largely in control of Iraq's Anwar province. Why not just say that in the first time? They are, but except it's not insurgents. Islam has two terms, which they use repeatedly to describe what they're doing. And in fact, they name their clubs after them. Mujahideen and jihadist. Those are Arabic terms that are found in the Quran. Mujahideen is a holy warrior in Allah's cause, and a jihadist is a fighter in Allah's cause. So Sunni jihadist, Sunni Mujahideen, seem largely in control of Iraq's Anbar province. They're total control. Where an estimated 1,500 of the 4,500 American troops killed in Iraq perished. One-third of those perish. Now, what we don't seem to want to acknowledge is that the American troops were killed in Iraq by both Sunni and Shiite. While the Sunnis and Shiites are at each other's throat, when there's another target that they hate even more than they hate one another available, they will work cooperatively. And so when Americans were there, they killed 4,500 Americans. Actually killed a lot more than that. That's just the number of American troops. And so when America was there, both Sunnis and Shia had a common enemy, America. When America left, they killed each other. When before America was there, they weren't killing each other because there was a secular dictator that kept a lid on things. We simply removed the lid. We sacrificed 4,500 American troops to take the lid off of this so that they would begin the civil war, and so that this civil war would spread to Syria. Fallujah, the province's second largest city, is the latest prize in the long simmering war between Shiite and Sunni strains of Islam. The conflict has now come to full boil 2 years after the last U.S. troops whose presence had laid such, had kept a lid on such fighting in Iraq. And of course, as we have determined, that this is how you have to be completely ignorant to write, I guess, for Time magazine. And it just goes back to what I just previously said. When American troops were in Iraq, for example, in Fallujah, they were treated savagely by the population, because now the population had an enemy that they hated more than they hated the other strain of Islam. And so, if you know, the great scene in Fallujah is when the two contractors, who are not counted in America's death, were murdered and then mutilated and then burned and then hung in effigy from a bridge while the town all celebrated.